Welcome to a brand new episode of the Z2 Podcast, where three friends go around together to defeat their greatest evil. As always, I am the turtle god, Zach.
I am the red floating balloon, Zach.
I am the terrifying clown, Steven.
And the 2017 version of It came out. In the most out of context thing is that in the movie, they featured lime green Legos, which were not out yet in the 1980s. That's the only issue of that entire film.
I saw a screen cap of that a while ago when it was in one of the trailers, and it was like, unwatchable.
Yep, lime green Legos were not introduced until after that movie.
But let's be real, that's everyone's worst nightmare, is just Legos on the floor.
Dude, in the trailer, you see the kid drop the turtle on the floor. I'm like, oh god, someone's going to step on these later.
That's the worst fear
of all.
That's
what they're going to use against Skarsgård.
Oh god, dude.
Seriously, like, how the fuck did they get someone to play Pennywise, whose last name is fucking Skarsgård?
He did a phenomenal... I actually like him better than Tim Curry.
Yep.
Is that how you say his name? Skarsgård?
Yes.
Yeah, Bill Skarsgård.
Okay.
To be fair, I think this is what Steve was going to say. Like, the 1990 version was a little more campy. Tim Curry was kind of...
Because it was a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah.
They didn't have the blockbuster budget this one did.
But, like, holy shit, Skarsgård was legitimately horrifying. I go into my principal's office, and she's kind of having a bad day. I'm like, hey, you want to see something funny? So I saw the 2017 Stephen King It movie, because if you just tell people you watched It, they're like, what?
You gotta say Stephen King's It.
Yeah. And I went to go see it. I was wearing my Fitbit. Here's my heart rate throughout the movie. And then she just starts laughing. She like puts her head on her desk and starts like thumping it, hitting the table.
Well, because if you look at the outline, it's like beginning of the day. Oh, that's normal. That's normal. About 10 o'clock, stays spiked for about 2 hours, and then slowly comes back down.
And it's funny because it's like looking at it closely, you get to see, all right, here's the lull period. Oh god. And they did such a phenomenal job of keeping like anxiety and stress throughout that movie.
It was
so everything I hate about horror movies.
There were very, very minimal jump scares, and the jump scares weren't even that bad, but it was just pure anxiety fear.
And it's not even like jump scare at the end of like the eerie sound. It's just like it's there. Pennywise is right in front of you.
Like someone does the tropey thing of they see something on the ground, bend over to pick it up, and there's the character standing behind them. I don't know if you caught this, but when Poetry Kid was in the library, the librarian was standing there just smiling at him the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like it took me a second to realize that. It's like, wait. That's the librarian just standing there. Oh, fuck. She's just staring at him and smiling.
Oh, fuck. It's him. And because he can shapeshift.
And it's one of those things that in the novel, when you read it, they talk about how Pennywise only shows up to the people he wants to be seen by. So there's a lot of shit that happens in the movie. Like, there's a scene where, again, it's the same exact thing from the 90 movie, or if you read the book, that's so old. There's a scene where Bev's... bathroom is just covered in blood. Like, she cuts her hair, throws it down the drain, and then she's one of the scenes she's getting strangled by her own hair. It's in the trailer, and then there's blood everywhere. What did Bev do right before that? She bought tampons. What is that whole scene about? Oh, the fear of womanhood. And then her dad comes in, it's like, what are you screaming about? And she's just covered in blood, screaming.
Like, she's covered in blood, everything's covered in blood, even the light. It's covered in blood and now gives like a red tint to everything.
Is it her blood?
Nope.
No, it's just blood.
It's just a torrent of blood that came out of her sink.
And it's just like the dad doesn't even notice. He like even touches her, brushes her hair back. It's like, calm down and walks out.
Yeah, it's like, I don't see anything. It's like, were you bleeding? And just walks out. And then the other kids come in. They see all the blood.
Yeah.
And the best scene ever happens.
They have a cleaning montage.
A random cleaning montage. Like, it's like fear, anxiety, cleaning montage.
Character development.
You're realizing they have feelings for each other. Now back to the fear.
Now they're all going to die together.
And one of the cool things...
Wait, sorry. They can't die. There's still another movie they have to be in.
Yes. Mm-hmm. When they die. Allegedly. Maybe. Spoilers.
Probably.
But it was just really cool. And I was telling...
30-year-old book?
Yeah, I was telling one of my coworkers, like, I went to go see it. No one else wanted to go see it, even though. And I'm like, some people are like, Stephen King just terrifies me. And I was telling them about it. I'm like, this is one of the most faithful adaptations to the book. The only things they left out was like the sewer orgy.
Nope, train. It was a train.
Oh god.
They all had sex with the same person. Ipso facto, it was a train.
Oh god. They kept it in though?
No.
No.
That was one of the things they omitted. Mostly because Stephen King said, yeah, it was a different time, and I was kind of coke blasted out of my mind at the time.
They're also children. He was also written.
He was also paid by the quarter a word. So that's why some of his books are so fucking massive. Mm. But
it makes a lot more sense now.
One of the things that got cut from the film, and the director even talked about it, they said they're actually going to start pre-production in January already because this movie blew the box offices out of the water, is that the whole mysticism behind it, like the macroverse, the Chudin ritual where they're supposed to go inside Pennywise's head and fight the literal demon that he is, all that's going to be in the sequel.
Oh, fun.
And what's really cool...
So all that money, like, they just made, they can use for all the CGI they're going to need.
Yeah, I mean, the movie... I'll look at the budget in a second, but I was joking to Steve. I'm like, this is like Stranger Things up to the 11 in fear. And there's one of the characters from Stranger Things is actually in the movie.
Oh, really?
The main not taken kid.
Mike.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mike plays Richie, who's the sarcastic wise ass, doesn't know when to stop talking.
To put it into perspective, if Zach and Adam fuse together.
Oh, sweet God.
I poked Steve. Child. I'm like, it me. Like, this kid kept making sexual innuendos the entire time, and his sarcasm was so strong. And it's so cool. Like, even the minor things that they changed, like Richie said he's scared of clowns at one point, but I think in the book it was a different fear. And then, like I said, there's just really minor things. Even the time jump of that this movie now takes place in the 1980s. You see a theater in the background, and it has Batman and has Lethal Weapon behind it. Yeah. And it's like, oh, cool, it's a different time. So by the time they do the 27-year jump, it's going to be in the early 2000s.
So take a wild guess on what the budget for the movie was.
Say 50 mil.
No, I'm going to say
50 mil.
15. Wait, you say 50 or 15?
50.
50.
I'm going to say 15.
In between, 35 million.
Okay.
And they've already made 189 million.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Again, horror movies are the way to make
money. Rated R horror movies don't sell.
Yeah, this is. Like,
wasn't Get Out rated R?
But it was originally.
It was a film festival. It was a Sundance movie. Okay.
Quote unquote an indie film, and then it blew up afterwards. Like Deadpool and maybe Titanic. I don't even think Titanic's rated R, but Deadpool is holds the title right now for the highest grossing R-rated film.
I think Titanic is technically PG-13, and it pushed the boundaries of PG-13 at the time. But I was listening to the radio, and they said that this is like it broke two records: the highest horror movie opening ever. And then the highest September opening of any movie ever. Not just horror. Any single movie that's ever opened in September has never opened this well.
And think about last week. The box office sucked.
Yeah, because there was
there was nothing.
There was Hitman's Bodyguard. Which is actually pretty good. That was about it.
And Rise of the Dragon. The Bruce Lee. Autobiography, but biopic.
So it always throws me off because they always say anything that references Bruce Lee, they always say... Like, they always reference him as an actor for some reason.
He was an actor.
Yeah, he was an actor.
Enter I thought he died.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he was still an actor before.
So, wait, are all these biopic movies, actual things he did before he passed?
Are you talking, Enter the Dragon and those sort of movies?
Biopics are, fictional, kind of,
Maybe I'm just confused the way they advertise them, then.
Think about, pop star being, a biopic or a mockumentary.
I get that. They might also have footage of... Bruce Lee. Okay. So they're crediting him as Bruce Lee
Yeah.
Okay. That makes more sense then.
Because imagine, trying to be the guy that has to do all these Bruce Lee moves and it's like, oh, you pulled your groin again.
Having to do the 1-inch punch.
Dude.
His yells are unreal.
So I actually want to ask, because I was listening to this on the radio. They were talking about it.
Mm.
And they were talking, what about it? Well, one of the... Go fuck yourself. They were talking about Stephen King's It now in theaters.
Chapter one.
Spoilers.
Part one, act one.
It's actually advertised as chapter one. If you look at movie posters.
Does it really?
Yeah, it's called It Part Chapter 1 Losers Club is the full title.
Everything I've seen it branded as it was just Stephen King's It. But anyhow, so over the weekend, someone put on Facebook that they took their child to go see It.
Why would you do
go
this?
Fuck yourself,
their
parent.
7-year-old child.
Why the fuck would you do this?
Okay, I'm glad you both agree, because they were getting so much flack from other parents of like, because the radio station said, yeah, that's a terrible mother right there. And they were getting flack for saying, no, she's not a terrible mother. How could you say that? I'm a 24-year-old grown-ass man, and I was fucking terrified.
Steve, literally, we sat down in our seats and was like, I'm not going to sleep tonight. And I'm like, what? I think I'll sleep well, but I'm going to have to really think about this movie.
Let me put it this
way.
Anything? Actually, hang on.
Anything.
This is what ruined horror movies for me, probably. Maybe not because just of how anxious I am as a person, but when I was 9, my dad was watching Signs, and obviously not super scary of a movie, but I decided, like,
for a
9-year-old,
like,
why
I
not?
Could, I could see it be a little upsetting for a 9-year-old.
Yeah, once the aliens, like, when they showed, like, all the bad, like, home video clips of them, I'm like, all right, nope, I'm out, I'm done. And then I want to say, like, for, like, a good 5 years, I was just terrified that aliens were going to abduct me in my sleep.
Well, Speaking of being 9.
Well, see, so, that's fine. You don't have to worry about that anymore.
So I imagine
they weren't actually aliens.
They might be demons.
They're actually demons.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they willingly came to a planet full of water, and that wasn't normal water. That was holy water.
It just seems like a dumbass idea. But imagine now a 7-year-old seeing fucking It, which is probably way scarier than Signs ever was.
Even that, it's absolutely horrifying. There's, like, the projector scene from the trailer where it just shows Pennywise's hair blowing back is 10 times more horrifying in theater. Like, I'm so glad Steve and I got such good seats, because if they made this a 3D film,
I would shit my pants.
Fuck you.
I
like,
would
so hard.
Shit my pants.
And speaking of the movie, so the film was like in developmental hell for like 5 years. And actually the guys who directed Stranger Things and wrote it originally went to Warner Brothers saying, we want to do the It film. Warner Brothers turned them down. That's why Stranger Things came out.
Huh.
And that's why there's so many weird similarities between like the Demogorgon and Pennywise.
Okay.
But on a metatextual level, the first movie came out in 1990. Pennywise wakes up every 27 years to feast on children.
Now, for all of you doing math at home, it has been 27 years since the original It came out. Exactly 27 years.
Which is really cool. Like, I'm sitting there, I'm thinking about it.
It goes along with the whole metaverse that's all of Stephen King's books.
Macroverse.
Yeah, it takes place in the same universe.
And even, I was joking around with Steve about that. Like, if Dark Tower would have done well, and then It, you know, being the movie that blew everything out of the water, they could have slowly started doing, like, a Stephen King cinematic universe, because that's what all movie studios want to do now. You have Valiant coming out, the G.I. Joe cinematic universe. Transformers is 6 movies in.
5. Wait. Transformers, Dark of the Moon.
And I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like,
Revenge of the Fallen.
If they actually do the macroverse, I can't imagine what kind of cool, neat little tidbits and Easter eggs are going to happen in the second film. Like, because we get the adult kids, they have to eventually do the ritual of Chud, or whatever it's called, and defeat Pennywise as adults. And I'm like, when they enter the macroverse, what the fuck are they going to see? Are they going to see the Dark Tower, which is, you know, Stephen King's embodiment? And even like you said, all of Stephen King's books have references to each other. Like, I think there's a reference to Stand By Me in the original book, in the JFK story.
11-22-63.
Yeah. The main character reads an article about Derry, where the story takes place, getting destroyed in some fashion. You know, spoilers for the book.
Isn't there a reference? I think there's a reference in the 11-22-63 show about the It story. Like,
probably.
Like clown terrorizing kids or something.
They did cut a scene that was in the book from the movie. Because they talk about a club in the movie called The Black Hole, which was like...
Black Spot,
that's it. That was like the... It was the African-American club around at the time. It was like, that was their place, and then racists burned it down. and one person escapes. And that person had a premonition about the fire that was going to burn down the club. That person who escaped is the caretaker in The Shining.
Really?
Yes.
Fun fact, in the Dark Tower movie, which I never actually got the chance to see, the Pennywise Circus appears as a decrepit, long-rotten amusement park and is one of the landmarks that Roland and Jake notice and even make camp next to during a portion of the film. And then you have the book Insomnia, where it talks about how the protagonist, his wedding ring rolls down in a drain in Derry at some point.
Yep.
And then that there's something else in the sewer which might pick it up. You have, I guess there's a Shawshank reference in the movie.
I didn't know Shawshank was actually a Stephen King book.
Yep.
Yep. There's a description of graffiti in Derry stating Pennywise lives in Shawshank. In the novel Tommyknockers, there's a mention of children disappearing in Derry, and one of the characters sees the clown Pennywise. And then Richie Tozier and Beverly and March appear in 11/22/63 when Jake Boat goes, he actually goes back to Derry in 1958.
That's what it, yeah, that's right. The character actually goes there. That's right.
Well, and
I'm going to go put a lid on my ice cream really fast.
The whole reason this, all of these books connect is because Stephen King's original plan was to make everything connected to the Dark Tower.
Right. Like the, like, Dark Tower was like, that the, was the end goal.
The Dark Tower was essentially the personification of his mind. Like all of his imagination, so everything comes together at one point. But then he had his accident in Maine, I think it was.
Which is why everything takes place in Maine.
Where he got hit by a car and almost died. And he kind of had that flash of mortality of, oh fuck, I need to finish these stories before I die.
Or they're never gonna get told. My God, he had the time to write stories.
Yep. He's had all the time to fix it all together, but at that point, he closed a lot of his stories up so they could be finished before he died.
He's only 69, too.
Mm-hmm.
He's still got time in him.
But he had that one accident years ago.
That brief brush with death.
Mm-hmm. That's partially why a lot of his books are centered in Maine. Is because
such a
a traumatic part of his life happened in Maine.
Cable.
So he's like, well, everything, because everyone's going to die in Maine now.
Fun You're fact, all in actually English teacher mode, it's not Dark Tower is a personification of something, but it's the living physical metaphor of all imagination.
Feel good about yourself.
Which is, so is that why the gunslinger has to protect the Dark Tower? Because if the Dark Tower falls,
never read Dark Tower, so.
Okay. Well, no, I'm just saying this is like an analogy, like. All I know is the gunslinger has to protect the Dark Tower. Is that like the Dark Tower is his imagination? If that dies, he dies with it.
Well, essentially, the Dark Tower in the stories is the wall between the Dark Tower world and our world. So it's kind of the Dark Tower keeps that world at bay from spilling into our world.
Okay.
So I guess it could be seen as he has to protect King's sanity, unless that all of his insane shit will leak out into the real world. Like, you know, a story about a murderous demon clown.
Yeah, and that's actually really cool. I'm happy that they're going back to the whole mystical element of Pennywise, because we see him shapeshift, we see him become other things, and for a brief moment we see his arms turn into the giant spider legs.
And he just starts picking at someone with them. And
I'm glad it's not just like a straight up clown thing or like a straight up demon. Like, one of the things that was ambiguous in the original book was whether or not they really killed Pennywise back in the 1950s. And then in this one, we actually see Pennywise like escape. And then we know he's going to return. And Bev tells all the kids about their vision. And then you look at it again at a metatextual level and you look at all the kids leave one by one. And it's like, oh shit, this makes so much sense. Because, you know, spoilers for the next half of that. But other than the fact that, you know, Steve said you would die watching this movie, we were looking at the cast list. And it was really interesting because Skarsgård wasn't the first choice. Carrie Fukunaga? Hang on. Cary Fukunaga was originally going to... He developed the first version of the screenplay, and people know him better as being the dude who directed and produced True Detective.
Oh.
But he left the film after being in developmental hell for so long, and then the prime choice character for... apparently this movie was like the production... The Wikipedia article actually got updated today, apparently. So there's more about it. But his original choice for Pennywise was Will Poulter, who is more famous known as the dude from Maze Runner.
You ever see We Are the Millers?
No.
Yeah, We're the Millers. He was Eustace in Chronicles of Narnia.
Oh, okay.
You get that one.
Yes.
And then he plays Gally, who's one of the main characters in Maze Runner.
Okay. He's the asshole in Maze Runner.
Yeah. So after...
I could see him as Pennywise, but not as a good Pennywise.
Yeah. So after Fukunaga left, Poulter left, and I think some of the other rumors was like the guy who plays Joker / Jerome on Gotham was also one of the lead choices.
God, he'd be terrifying.
Yeah. But Gotham had such like a heavy filming process that he probably wouldn't have the chance. Other people were Mark Rylance, Ben Mendelsohn, Kirk Acevedo, Richard Armitage, Hugo Weaving, and Tilda Swinton.
I could see Hugo Weaving.
I could see Tilda Swinton.
That'd be a very odd pick.
Yeah.
I'd be very curious to see it.
I don't know if I'd want to see full crazy Tilda Swinton. Like
that's what has me intrigued by it. It's the wild card factor. Like, it could be amazing.
Yeah, she's just carrying gasoline in the back of a van and then cuts the brakes.
Wild card.
But Skarsgård did like amazing. Like, he has those moments of light and brevity, and then he goes like full Heath Ledger for a moment where it's just like he just stops smiling and then does the creepy voice. And then in the credits, there's a like, you know, Georgie saying, you'll float too. And then it just shows it again. And then it's just Pennywise's laugh afterwards.
Good Lord.
It was really cool.
We sat through the credits for that.
I've never walked out of a movie, but that might have been one I would just couldn't take anymore.
There was someone who, I can't remember who it was, but they said their son went to go see it with his girlfriend. And she had to leave the theater. Like, 20 minutes in, she just noped right the fuck out.
Yeah. I don't blame her.
I get to go see it again with Kayla when she comes God back to
Christ.
Visit.
Like the
How does your heart handle that?
The projector scene, like, I was straight up curled up in the chair. Like, I legs up, knees up, arms around my legs.
And I was doing that thing where I just cover half my face with my shirt.
I did notice. I found out that was your scare towel. It's like, I just look over and I just see you, like,
something's gonna happen.
Put it over the nose and like,
how much screaming was there?
No one screamed.
Really?
Like, I can see if it were like maybe like a Friday night or a Thursday opening when people were getting hyped for it, but it was like Sunday morning.
Okay.
Well, and there,
people should have been at church, Zach.
Well, and that's the thing is, it wasn't.
They're gonna need Jesus after that.
Like, it wasn't really a screaming movie. Yeah, there weren't jump scares to like snap that fear out of you quickly. It was that anxious build that slowly built up through the movie.
There wasn't don't go in there moments. It was just like, oh fuck, oh shit, god damn it, why? That was my entire like mantra throughout the whole film, especially like, when they go into like the burnt down house. Yeah, I'm like, god fucking damn it.
Oh, they're going into the house. Oh, they're all going into the house. Oh, you broke the most important rule, never split the party. Fucking Stan's
an asshole.
He split the party.
I would, you know what I would love?
Or was
I
that Eddie? That was Eddie, because Stan stayed outside. The short kid with the fanny pack?
I thought Stan was a short kid with a fanny pack.
No, Stan is the Jewish kid.
Okay.
I want to see a really good horror movie where, like, all the main characters are aware of, like, the horror movie tropes, but they still get fucked.
Oh, Until Dawn.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, show, like, a whole Until Dawn movie and make it horrifying. Like, they know what to expect, like, don't split up the party, and then somehow they still get split up.
That's a fucking Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
It was a lot like that.
We still I thought need Cabin in the Woods isn't that. Really
horror so much as just a breakdown of horror.
It's both.
It's a horror slash deconstruction horror.
Okay.
Which we need to fucking watch it. Movie night. It needs to happen.
Well, See, the thing with that is that a lot of... Are they actually aware that, like, of all the tropes? Like, it just seems like they just kind of play along to the tropes.
It's not like they... It's not like parody movie level.
Right.
Where it's like, we're aware this is happening and we're going to point it out to the audience. It's like, you're painfully aware that this trope is going to happen and the characters just kind of play into it a little bit.
Yeah, and they kind of flip it. Like, I guess the only films that are aware of, like, the realizations of, like, horror movie tropes are, like, things like Zombieland or even the first couple Scary Movies where they...
But that's all comedy, though.
Yeah.
That's, like, the point is they're pointing out these tropes and making fun of them.
Yeah. I mean, horror is hard enough as it is, and for characters
That's why I think it'd be a cool thing to, like, play up. Like, that'd be a really well done... Like, if you could pull that off, like... But bravo, yeah. Sir, bravo.
But pulling that off with, like, proper character development and building a proper horror villain. Like, I was sitting there, right. And I'm like, as much as I loved this new movie, I would have loved having more development time with the kids, because we just see them get, like, emotionally or physically abused the entire time and eventually building up that loser's club mentality. And there's maybe, like, one or two moments of brevity, but it's kind of like, oh, man, these kids. Fucking kids.
But for real, though, fucking Ben.
Yeah. One of the Stephen King's, like, when they recently did a interview with him, and it's like, yeah, all these people are freaked out by, like, the whole sex scene, but we literally have a character in the movie and in the book who gets, like, physically tortured. Like, he gets stabbed, he gets cut up on purpose by actual people. And you can say it's like, oh, it's Pennywise influencing him. Like, no, not really. This kid's, like,
this is all prior to Pennywise even really being an influence in this town.
Mm-hmm. It's a good movie, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that weird mentality the U.S. has about sex and talking about it and showing it. Aside from the fact that it's a creepy-ass scene that has been described to me, I'm like, I do not want to watch that.
Yeah, it's a bunch of children having sex in a sewer.
Yeah.
While shit's going down.
And that's what I like about the new film is, like, they kind of just, like, hug it out. Like, it's a really emotional scene. They hug it out, and then it's a hard cut to the next month. And you kind of see, like, the same thing that happened in the book. Like, the kids' memories start fading about the entire event, but they know at some point Pennywise is going to come back. And the last scene in the movie is one of the scenes from the trailer where it shows all the losers together holding hands.
Blood in, blood out, son.
They made a blood oath.
Nice.
Poor Ben was used to it at that point.
That's how you get diseases.
Well... There is a character that is a germaphobe, and that's actually really relevant to his character. Like, he gets chased down by a nightmare version of a leper.
Neat.
Yeah. Like I said, when the new movie comes out, I'm really interested to see how they do the cast. Like, the director said there might be flashbacks to the first film, or they cut two scenes that are going to be included in the new film. And it's like, I really was like, oh, man, these kids are so great. And then it's like, oh, man, these kids are adults now, and they're played by totally different people, and they don't have the same chemistry. And even on set, like, the girl that played Bev was saying that the directors wanted them to not be around Skarsgård at all when they weren't on camera, because they wanted the horror to be real. They physically did not see Skarsgård until he appeared in the movie.
Yeah, and then I heard, like, the first scene they had to stop because they were so terrified.
Or at least one of the kids was. And then, like, I think that might have been a rumor at this point, because I haven't read anything else about it. But, like, after, like, filming some of the big scary scenes, Skarsgård would come out and play and talk to the kids. And I'm like, I wouldn't do it. And one of the cool things, so the director... what's the director's name? Andy Muschietti. He was also the guy who directed Mama. So it kind of has some of the similar vibes, but he was saying that one of the things he wanted to do was have Pennywise in post-production stare at the scene and, like, have his eyes move in two different directions. They learned Skarsgård could do that.
Oh, like, God.
So at certain points in the film, his eyes would go two different ways, but one eye is always looking at the camera. No. Like I said, if the movie was in 3D, I would have shit myself.
And that was just Skarsgård being Skarsgård.
No.
They're like, oh, thank God we don't have to do this in post-production. You saved so much money.
Well, and apparently, this is like the most fucked up thing I've heard, is at one of the Alamo Drafthouse showings of it.
But the clowns?
No. Even better. The actor who played Georgie, the little kid at the very beginning, was there in his yellow raincoat, just
standing
at the front of the theater, just looking straight at the crowd. Apparently his dad was there too, but still, that's fucked up.
God.
That's really cool, though, that like he showed up.
Well, and like no one went up to talk to him because they were all terrified of him.
It's like, is Pennywise behind the...
He has some really fucked scenes in that movie. Like, the whole thing is like, we gotta find Georgie, and, you know, everyone realizes Georgie's dead at the beginning of the movie.
So, wait, in, like, the very, like, one of the trailers I saw, it like, he's running down at the sewer drain, is he the first
that's
one
the beginning
taken?
Of the movie.
So he gets taken.
That's what sets off the plot, is that,
it is Stranger Things.
In the 2017 movie...
Or Stranger Things is it.
Yeah, in the 2017 movie, Bill's motivation for... fighting Pennywise and everything else is that he wants to find Georgie. He still just thinks he's missing, even though it's been like a month or so. Whereas in the book, it's like, well, Georgie's dead. Time to get fucking revenge. So it made it really cool to have that reveal that Pennywise is the one there dealing with everything. And it's crazy because I'm looking at this director. He's only directed 3 films. Mama as a short film. Mama, again, based on his short film. And then It. And I've always credited Mama to being a Guillermo del Toro thing.
Yeah, that's why.
Because it's like, you know, the Spanish-speaking thing. And he actually only served as the executive producer on that movie. So that's really cool. Like, I'm just sitting there trying to imagine then, like, you know, del Toro has like 1,000,001 projects. If he had a little more hand in It, or even Cary Fukunaga, you know, True Detective, how that would have played into the different variations of this film.
Yeah. Who knows?
I would give it 2 thumbs up, though. Like, you know, to kind of wrap up the conversation. It was such a solid film.
Such a good movie.
I'm not going to see it. I physically will not be able to handle it. Stephen King's It.
Chapter 1.
Now in theaters. Club.
Yeah. In happier news, I learned my sister got a new dog.
Hooray!
So the one on the left.
Oh, that's exciting. We also got a new dog in our D&D campaign.
It's a little buzzer.
That was also Steve's reaction to our dog in our campaign.
God, the wolf.
Because all dogs are either ozers or debozerwozers, and some are ozer debozerwozers.
It's like puppers and doggos.
I was actually going to make Zook a paladin, but I thought a cleric would be a little bit funnier. Because I'm not going to keep Clark as a main character. I'm just going to have Zook.
It's too much.
Yeah. I mean, if Adam ever wants to come back and play Kark, he's very welcome to.
Kark.
Dude, I've been up since 4:15 this morning.
Wanted to do this yesterday.
I know, and I was stuck grading papers all morning and night.
Yeah, I already told this story to you last night, but when I went to, it was like 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and I went, knocked on your door like 3 times. You didn't, like, do anything, so I, like, slowly cracked it open, so you had headphones on, and you were, like, head down into your keyboard. I'm like, okay, we'll do it later.
I don't think I stopped grading until...
It was, like, 8.
Like, you stop by my door at about 8 o'clock, and you're like, I found 5 more. I thought I was done.
I think I stopped at 11 last night.
Holy fuck.
Jesus Christ. I thought you went to bed.
So maybe we don't procrastinate on... grading papers.
I got all the papers on Friday.
Maybe you don't assign it.
How many did you do on Saturday?
20.
And how many?
47.
Now we know where you fucked up.
Yeah, I should have went exactly half on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Alrighty.
Found those 5 missing ones.
Do the halvesies.
Oh, fun fact. Guillermo del Toro starred in an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia as Poppy McPoyle.
Huh. I could see it, though. I could see Guillermo del Toro being
I
a
know
foil.
The exact scene that it's in reference to. But we're gonna
good news,
it.
Everyone!
Futurama's back?
Kind of.
Again?
Sort of.
As a radio show podcast.
Yeah. So Chris Hardwick's Nerdist podcast is going to reunite the cast of the Departed Classic on September 14th for Radiorama.
That's incredible.
Yes.
I don't have to say goodbye a third time.
Yes. But apparently it's going to... Wait, hang on.
Is it going to be like an ongoing series, or is it just going to be like a special mini-series sort of thing?
I think it's just going to be a one-time thing. Because it seems like it's there to promote a mobile game, Worlds of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you will have to say goodbye again.
Yeah, so it'll probably be like a one episode thing to kind of tie into this.
Let me get my acoustic and play some Green Day. Just time of our life.
Dun, 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 dun.
I love Futurama so much. I recently found a subreddit that's people who listen to Futurama while they fall asleep. And it's like, the creators are like well aware of it. It's like, yeah, we're on the subreddit looking at episodes, and it's kind of funny just to see which episodes people would always go back to and kind of treat as their whole ASMR experience. And like with me, my like ASMR is that triggers like listening to people have conversations and like hearing spray paint cans and shake and everything else. So I'm like, huh, I wonder what this is about. I did that one night. Best sleep I ever had. And it was the, what was the episode? It was when, it was about Fry's dog.
Oh, God,
no.
Scruffy?
No,
Scruffy's the janitor.
What is the dog's name?
Seymour.
Yeah, Seymour. God, why would you do that to yourself?
It's one of my favorite episodes. I was like, even if I don't fall asleep, I'll at least be able to listen to it.
It's that and the one with his brother and digging up his nephew's grave.
Yeah.
Did you ever do the Jurassic Park is the episode title?
Yep.
Did you ever watch the episode where he says goodbye to his mom?
No.
That's in that one. That was part of the Comedy Central seasons. Okay. I think it's like season 8 or something. But there's this spaceship going around that's like destroying planets, and then Fry's like, wait, I know this noise, I know where it is. And then they put a dream helmet on Fry and they take him back to the year 1999 and try and have Fry live out his life still, but as soon as it hits 2000, he has no memory of that, so everything becomes like a white plain background. So he tries to run home and see his mom, and then he has to say goodbye to her, and he tells her like all the things, like how he fell in love, how he met his best friend and everything else. And then Nibbler comes back and gives him the helmet again. It's like, here, you can talk to her in her dreams, in her sleep, but only at this point in time. And it's like the day before Fry goes missing. And it's like, oh, God. Like, again, between like all those weird shows that came out in the mid 2000s or early 90s, like Futurama, Family Guy, American Dad, and everything, Futurama is the only comedy that I felt like was meant for the smart people,
mm-hmm.
like dumb people do in a smart
it
TV
had,
show.
It had that very, I mean, they all kind of had that dry humor, but Futurama was just like the hard dry humor, because they would have the punchline and then just dead silence and then end scene.
Mm-hmm.
They do that a lot.
And they just have episodes that just mean absolutely fucking nothing.
Yeah. Well, one of the cool things is that, like, the creators have degrees in mathematics, and I think one even has a doctorate. There's a episode where they...
So it's a Ninja Brian.
Yeah, one of the episodes when they do the brain swapping machine, again, it's part of the mm-hmm. Comedy Central seasons, there's a mathematical equation of how many times they need to switch bodies because they can't switch with the original person they switch in order to return to their bodies.
Right.
So there's a mathematical equation that they write on the board that is essentially the plot of the episode. Whereas you have something like Big Bang Theory and they just write random gibberish on the board.
Yeah. Here's a reference and laugh track.
Yeah.
But Zach, random nerd stuff, laugh track.
But Futurama has the best continuity of any TV show out there. Even things like Nibbler's ghost is his shadow's even in the first episode. It's like, the fuck, man.
That continuity is good, but I think Community might challenge it for best continuity. They set up a 3-season joke.
Is it the pregnant lady?
No.
Oh.
It's Beetlejuice.
Okay.
In the first season, they ask, like, what was the name of the star they talked about in class? Oh, Beetlejuice. Another, like, they asked the second thing that led to someone saying Beetlejuice. And then in the third one, on the Halloween episode, someone says Beetlejuice, and you see in the background for just for like 1 second, someone dressed up as Beetlejuice walk across the screen. It's like, God damn you, Dan Harmon.
I can't remember if it was like Community or Arrested Development, but there's like an entire love story going on in the background.
How I Met Your Mother.
Is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where the character like meets him.
Yeah, like it, when they're in their bar at their table, at another table behind them, like at one point there's someone on like a first date, and then...
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
You see the up to them like at the very end of the show, like the last season, it's them holding a baby. Like,
man.
And at one point they even pointed out in an episode like there was the whole love story in the background.
Okay. Also, in terms of continuity, it's Always Sunny.
Yeah. Like,
you can't beat that.
Rickety Cricket.
Rickety Cricket, Frank.
Arrested Development had good continuity, too.
Yeah. Such great shows.
Like, everything would come back to when Tobias blew himself.
And what? Fuck, what's the thing they always have? The banana stand?
There's always money in the banana stand.
That's right. I got it right. I've never actually watched Arrested Development.
So good. It's another one of those, like,
it's
dry humor that when you actually, like, when you pay attention, you're like, huh, that's good.
It's pretty much like always like an Always Sunny cast because they're all terrible people.
It's Always Sunny before Always Sunny existed.
And essentially, okay. It's age-old question,
oh, God,
did Arrested Development make Michael Cera, or did Michael Cera make Arrested Development?
Arrested Development made Michael Cera.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like he's just always like that.
The first season he was in, he wasn't the best character, and then, like, as he got his groove, his character was fantastic.
2003.
That's way before Sunny.
Yeah, Sunny was 2005 then.
Yeah, I think so. Speaking of characters, we got recent news that Minka Kelly has been cast as Dove in Warner Brothers live action Titan series, as well as Alan Richson cast as Hawk. And that throws away one of my fan casts for Shazam.
Oh, Alan Richardson.
Yeah.
Who are the two that are in talks for it right now? I think John Cena was in talks.
No, those were rumors.
Well, yeah, rumors for being in talks. I think John Cena, and who was the other person who was rumored for it?
Shit, no. I just find the article that Shazam will be played by two actors.
Really?
Fucking no way.
John Cena and... it was, yeah. I'm finding that article.
I know someone posted it in CCBE.
Shut up. What was up?
You can't see me, man. You can't see me.
John Cena and someone named Sassy. I'm trying to find his first name. I can't find it. But. You know, one of the things that bothers me the most about this Titans casting?
What?
Is that they use the female Dove. And it's not because it's like, oh my god, it's a girl. It's more like, but Dawn and Hank, like, at this point, not many people realize there was a male Dove.
Yeah.
Unless you watched the Justice League Unlimited show.
I actually didn't.
Really?
Yeah. I don't remember male
Hank and
Dove.
Dawn? They had like a whole Super Friends kind of episode.
I don't remember that. All I know is Hank, or, the Hawk and Dove of the comics.
Hank Hall and Don Granger?
Yeah.
What about the second Hawk? Dove's sister. Because originally,
I don't know
Don died.
Very well.
Hawk went evil and turned out to be like the villain of an arc. And that was like really poorly written and badly received. And then he died and disappeared. And then Hank was revived during Brightest Day.
I remember that.
And then he has to accept
that. Part of the Birds of Prey for a while.
Yeah. He had to accept that Don Granger was just not necessarily a replacement for his brother, but it was the new Dove, and there was nothing he could do about it.
Part of the plot from Birds of Prey with Gilson, like after Brightest Day?
Probably.
Because it was like Don trying to figure out how to calm this guy.
Yeah. What are you looking at, Steve?
The other dude who was rumored to be in, or to be Shazam, it was, I just had the name here, Joshua Sese, who he was in Galavant, good show, need another season, And then he was also in the very short CW show, No Tomorrow.
Hmm. That was a great show. But yeah, I mean, like, as the production draws near, it's kind of hypey that we actually do get the Titans. But it's like, man, I'm really hoping they just go full on balls deep for, like, the costumes and everything else. They recently put out a casting call for their Beast Boy, and they wanted to be played by an Asian kid, 16 years old, like a light kind of medium build. And I'm like, oh, sweet. So they're going to paint him green for like the first 3 episodes and then magically make a device that makes him look normal, like Nightcrawler.
Save money on that.
Got to save money on that body paint.
Yeah.
God damn, now I'm thinking about it. Alan Richardson would be a perfect Shazam.
He just has a doofy smile.
He has that perfect demeanor that he could play a man-child. He is a man-child.
Well, do you remember when they were talking about production for Laser Team? When Alan would clap, he had both arms out like a penguin and would clap instead of, like, you know, kind of arms bent in and just
I remember him on the Extra Life stream.
God, just throwing the tub of mac and cheese.
Five pounds of mac and cheese that he was just throwing around. And then when it finally exploded, he's like trying to scoop it. I was like, shut up. Don't tell anyone.
Gus.
I'm going to get in trouble. Like, you are a man child and I love it.
Like, yeah. Then he's in Blue Man State.
Fucking Thad Castle is the greatest character.
If there's not a scene of Hank Hall doing cocaine, I'm going to be so upset.
Or talking about his pocket
nothing,
pussy, Svetlana.
Nothing shows the struggles of war and anger like cocaine.
I miss Blue Mountain State. The movie that they did not do it justice.
Didn't they do a TV series after?
No.
No.
They did the TV series, then went into the Kickstarter for the Blue Mountain State movie.
Okay.
This movie was all right, not that great. I missed the show, though.
I remember another funny story from Laser Team was that they had to make a doll for his character Adam in the film Laser Team.
Oh, yeah.
So they bought one of 2 Smallville action figures of him as Aquaman, and then the scene literally just calls for him to destroy it, and they like bought it mint in the box for like $60.
God.
And I'm like, yep, that's a... Every time I look at the one in the Hall of Justice, I look at it, I'm like, I saw one of these get destroyed.
Somebody's broken this.
Not just destroyed, taken out of the box, painted, plastic little pieces put on, and then destroyed.
Also ripped, because they had to put the Laser Team outfit on it and take off the Aquaman armor.
Yep.
Armor with air quotes here.
It was like a tunic, wasn't it?
It was a onesie.
Not even that.
It was a jumpsuit.
No, it wasn't a jumpsuit. It was a hoodie that was sleeveless and it was green and orange.
Oh, the Aquaman armor.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a sleeveless hoodie.
Yeah. Smallville, for all of its problems, not actually that bad, but man, those later seasons. But hey, shout out to Smallville for bringing Aya into the comics in season 11, quote unquote.
Like Aya from Green Lanterns?
Yep. What? Brian Q. Miller wrote the comic books that took place after Smallville season 10. So got to introduce Batman. He introduced Nightwing, who was supposed to be Stephanie Brown, and they changed it to Barbara Gordon. And then because Stephanie was like one of those characters that was just in limbo during the New 52. And then... Yeah. He introduced Aya when Clark became a Green Lantern.
Huh.
And Aya was just a robot. Not like not super AI. Full... Adorable.
Also, shout out to Smallville for not having Roy as Oliver's sidekick, but going straight to Thea. Thea the prostitute, not Thea the Durden. Sister.
Yeah, Dearden.
Dearden.
Tyler Dearden.
Oh, yeah. Whoops. My mistake.
It's okay. We all make mistakes. Colton Haynes says he's coming back to Arrow very soon. So that's cool.
Even though he came out at one point and said he's done with Arrow.
You'll never be done.
No.
When does he get his arm
ripped off?
There he did Prometheus, though.
That was true.
The season for the... Or that was the villain last season.
Well, no arm.
You were not done with Arrow. Arrow done with you.
And I think they brought Cheshire into the show at one point in the early seasons.
Yeah, they did.
Or was that just China White?
No, they brought Cheshire in at one point.
Because the person who plays China White is Cheshire in Young Justice.
Yeah, I think they just did China White. I don't remember them introducing Cheshire.
All right, guys, Zach's looking that up.
If they did that, I don't think they ever pointed out her name, really.
Nope, that's not the right one. That's the actual like the comics wiki. That's Young Justice.
Vamping the telephone.
It's not showing up.
Kelly Hugh is the actor.
So what they can
she's
do
definitely
is in. They can bring back Roy, rip off his arm, give him his robot arm, and then bring in Cheshire.
And then give him a baby.
Well, a couple seasons later. They'll go away for a couple seasons and then come back and be like,
"Do you think
I have a baby?"
Here is an old rumor. Could Thea become DC villain Cheshire in Arrow season 3? No, she did not.
No, she
became Speedy. Well, especially when they were like, they said Mia or Thea. Middle name was Mia.
That's right. Yeah, that's how they got Mia Dearden.
Her mother's maiden name was Dearden.
That's right. That's and how I'm they. Like,
What a roundabout way of doing these things.
Yeah, that's how they shoehorned that one in.
Oh, she is a Jarnac too. She really is Speedy.
Yeah.
But hey, if they ever revisit the Flashpoint universe, they can have Tommy come back and be Merlin.
Tommy, you're too good to just be a hologram, bro.
Darn you, Chicago PD. But hey, Barry...
Chicago MD.
Okay.
He's a doctor, not a police officer.
But hey, Barry fucks the timeline more than Iris, so...
Chicago Med.
I mean, there's always a chance, right? Can't wait to see what time travel shenanigans we get.
Look, all they need to do is pull him from another multiverse.
Have you seen the thing on YouTube that counts how many Barrys were in the house on the night Nora was murdered?
Yeah, because it's like, there were two of me. Wait, nope, three of me. Hold on.
There's one behind the door, then there's one outside of the door, there's the one fighting Thawne, then there's the one that rescues the younger Barry, so there's like a total of seven Barrys and like two Thawnes in that scene.
God. I want to see if I can find the actual...
Fastest man alive still needs seven of himself to get anything done.
Still needs seven of himself to get his mother killed.
I am the fastest man
alive. Fastest man alive. I wonder if that's why you can't get a date. Oh, God, I love that show.
Speaking of dates, has Kojima announced anything yet for Death Stranding?
Not recently. But he went on Twitter recently, and not the joke tweet about like the big corn building, but he actually like laid out his gave some perspective to his thinking process for how he comes up with like developing a game. So I'm going to read through a series of tweets here. So, starting off with a quote, let's say we imagine a hallway that the player is meant to walk down according to the game design. The hallway has meaning in the plot as well as the game design. Is the purpose to deliver the story, to practice the controls, to show the scenery, or to add rhythm to the gameplay? A variety of possibilities exist.
So that's literally the beginning of a Phantom Pain that you're describing.
Or PT.
Snake, yeah, where Snake is in the hospital and he's learning how to walk and crawl again.
Yep. Let's see, continuing, scripts and gimmicks change every day. This is what it means to make games. Going down, hang on, this isn't the full list of all the tweets. Hang on, let me find it. It's really fascinating. Here we go. There are other various details to consider, like adding a crank turn it to the hallway. Is it possible to add NPCs? How to fix poor gameplay tempo, making the character stand out, or even whether to show the ceiling in cutscenes. Almost every day revisions are made depending on the point in the game development process. An action game can never be completed by ordering from a blueprint and assembling parts off a factory line. If decision making and supervision are delayed, production efficiency drops, and that leads to redoing work. In order to avoid this trap, one must make small daily adjustments on site while creating the game. When everything is outsourced, the parts that come back just don't fit together.
Look at you, Mass Effect.
Yeah. That is why it's important to take charge of the little details every day. The feeling of gameplay in a single hallway, the concept, the visuals, the controls, the story hints, the map, the sound, the directions, all of those are important to the overall game. Scripting gimmicks change every day. This is what it means to make games. A process completely different from the concept, script, to game design, to pre-production, to shooting, to post-production process of film.
Yeah. I mean, Kojima's a monster at everything that he does. Like, you know, there's the old joke of how he used to work at a old studio. He couldn't animate something.
Yeah, and they're like, they, like, apparently in Japanese culture, they just beat you down and they're like, can you at least make one good game in your entire useless life? Bitch, he's made like 7 now. Even probably more, actually, now I think about it.
Everything he touches, like, Kojima and...
They're always so weird, but they're so recognizable.
Mm-hmm. Like, even you describing the hallway scene, I'm like, okay, this is Metal Gear. Or even... Or
PT is the first thing I think of. Like, yeah, that's exactly what PT was, a hallway.
Or if you jump back to Metal Gear 2, when you play as Raiden, and you have to learn all the stealth moves, you're walking around naked. You don't have a gun. You don't have anything. You just have to rely on your ability to fucking hide. Like, it's really cool to see kind of Kojima go throughout his thought process, because there really isn't that many developers who do that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's kind of just, like, overall game development stuff, but it's still pretty cool to get in someone's head who's been doing it for so long, just to kind of, like, see how their thought process goes when they're creating just even just a simple walk down the hallway.
Right. It's tough, man. I don't know how you
video games are cool, man.
So there are 5 Barry Allens in that house. That night. Okay. They're the first 2 Flash, the one who fights Thawne, and then the one behind the door.
Right.
Then there is Flash number 3, who takes Kid Barry to safety. Then there is Flash number 4, who, according to this guy's breakdown, warns Flash number 5 not to stop Thawne. So it's 1 and Thawne fighting, and then they run out.
Oh, yeah.
5 comes in at the end of season 2 to stop Thawne. Stops Thawne, but then Flash number 4 stops 5.
Who's the one from season 3.
Yeah.
To reset Flashpoint.
Yeah, who goes and stays, kind of warns Flash 5, hey, get the fuck out of here, you're going to make a paradox, and leaves. So we got 5 Flashes, 1 Thawne.
I'm Para, and this is my brother Doc.
Technically 6 berries, because there's Kid Barry there for a second.
I was close saying 7.
Yeah. Only if you count Kid Barry. If we're going just Flash Berries, we got 5.
What about Blueberries?
Later.
Oh, gosh. I really can't wait to see how they try and... Because if you look at all the CW shows, they... Like, season 5 of Arrow was like, we're going to blow up Leon Yu. Only Oliver and his child survive, allegedly, even though we see the cast photos later. Season 3 of Flash, Barry disappears into the time... not the time Force, the Speed Force. Yeah. Legends of Tomorrow. How did Legends end? That was when...
they fucked up the timeline, and there were...
Oh, God, leave the timeline alone.
There were dinosaurs in London/New York.
And oh, it's a Doctor Who episode.
The timeline needs a fucking break, man.
They crashed in New York.
So
Big
tired.
Ben was there, and then the T-Rex walked across the screen.
Supergirl kind of ended in a good closure. But today, freaking... Either Guggenheim or Berlanti tweeted, it's like, here's your hint for this year's crossover, and shows just like the stone tablet or pillar. And people, it's really funny the amount of people who go just to comment about Illicity and those things. And
or
it's like,
send Gail Simone more Illicity stuff.
Yeah. It's like, oh, is this going to ruin the Illicity wedding? Someone's like, oh, is Barry going to fuck that too? And it's like, I'm really curious to how they're going to pick everything up, because by the time
that's
we see Oliver from the SDCC trailer, he's like all businessman, his son's a little bit older, and I'm like, but where's everyone else?
Well, yeah, like there was a article on Yahoo that was like, Deathstroke set photos, and he looks surprisingly normal. It's like, okay, so Slade makes it out alive.
Neat.
Yeah, it's like, cast photos of the entire crew. Look, there's Spartan, right? That's his name?
Yes.
Diggle. And Black Canary. I'm like, okay, so they survived. Hooray. Jazz hands.
I'm going to guess the only person who's going to die is going to be not Connor's mother.
Not Connor's mother?
I refuse to call him by his real name. He should be Connor. Fuck Diggle Jr. William. William's mom's gonna die, and that's why Oliver's taking care of him now. Then he can train him, mold him to be the next sidekick. Soon we'll have a true
one of the other cool things that they revealed is that Richard Dragon is gonna be in this season. He's an old Green Arrow character.
That's not from the Here There Be Dragons storyline, is there?
Here There Be Dragons. Yar.
So Richard Dragon was created by Dennis O'Neill and Jim Barry in the novel Kung Fu Master Richard Dragon's Dragon's Fist.
See, the dude who like turns into, like goes all green and scaly and then gets like a dragon fin mohawk.
No, that's Savage Dragon. He's just like one of DC's like
C-list greatest characters.
Greatest martial artists that they could probably afford. His first appearance was in Green Arrow 23.
Callback. Okay.
Yeah.
Neato burrito.
But some people are like, oh, that thing, that freaking stone thing, that must be Question's fedora fossilized. And I'm like, why? He wears a trilby, damn it.
Oh, fuck. This just in, breaking news. Since the Broncos just scored a touchdown, $1 Arby's roast beef sandwiches tomorrow.
Gross.
Limit one per store. Go fuck yourself. Arby's is delicious.
Eat Arby's. Hey, again, you gotta love the freaking Arby's Twitter account. I punched the mic.
Let me see what today's nihilist Arby's is.
Wasn't me today.
We need nihilist Arby's, and we also need whatever their last nerdy post was. I'll get that one.
Nothing says who gives a shit like shameless merchandise, so fuck it. Eat Arby's.
Someone put a shit post on the Arrows subreddit, and it's like, new post for season 6, and it's Batman with his bow from Batman Zero Year.
When it comes to our sandwiches, that's the inside job. Today we're building.
The latest one was Sailor Moon, I think?
Oh, that's Sailor the Mercury? Anime. That's pop culture Arby's, not nihilist Arby's.
Yeah, pop culture Arby's. That's why I went to look.
Yeah, okay. I'm skipping today's nihilist Arby's because, shockingly, 9/11 related.
That's right. Oh no.
Yeah, I'm just going to skip over that one.
Nihilist this one's from Arby's. Yesterday.
Fun fact, it seems as if the villain...
Sailor Mercury. Whew, got that one right.
It seems like the villain for DC's Titans is going to be in this paragraph somewhere that I'm trying to read sideways.
Well, while you read that, we'll go for Labor Day's nihilist Arby's. This Labor Day, remember to slave thanklessly at a soulless task you hate for most of your life, only to die poor and forgotten. Enjoy Arby's.
Okay, so the villain is going to be Acolyte. Acolyte is a little-used character from the comics who made his first appearance in the Young Justice comic in 1999. He is apparently a demon, and he falsely claims to be a metahuman. So it's kind of cool that we get to see this character, I suppose. But, I mean, it's better than Trigun as the first appearance. If anything, it's like cool little stepping stones to eventually bring Trigun into the series.
What about Etrigan?
Etrigan, leave him alone. I know. He's wonderful.
I'm a Vetrigan.
He drops hot fire.
I know. I want a rapping fucking demon on the show.
I'm a fan. Also, confirmed news that Patty Jenkins is officially tied up to the Wonder Woman sequel.
Woo!
And DC's Metal says 262,000 copies, more than any 2017 comic, beating DC Rebirth's number one's first month.
They said it couldn't be done.
And then Scott Snyder rose from the abyss and said, "Let there be metal."
So yeah, let's get through these last two things.
Okay, still trying to like email parents.
Still have to edit this.
Really unfortunate news is that Len Wein passed away. He was one of the co-creators of Swamp Thing
and Wolverine,
and Nightcrawler, and a bunch of other characters. Literally, if you read a comic book in the 90s, Len Wein touched that character at some point. Yeah. Like, he touched them. Like, he held Wolverine's hand.
Can you show me on the doll where he touched Wolverine?
The hand. The claws. The snicket. But what the about snicket Swampy? And the Banff. And the Swampy.
And the green.
It's really unfortunate, like, especially since last year he finally came back to write a Swamp Thing story.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is so cool.
I wanted to find, like, what was the last thing he wrote? Because if it was that Swamp Thing story, that'd be, like, even though it's really sad, it's also really fitting that one of the creators he helped create was his last thing he touched in terms of, like, writing.
He touched it right in the marsh.
Right in the green.
Right in the green.
Yeah, dude, it's really unfortunate. And like seeing all the love and from all the creators on Twitter, like one of the cool things that was on the DC subreddit was Brian Michael Bendis's tweet. And I'm like, what? Bendis on the DC subreddit? Since when? And then he was just talking about how Len Wein was kind of like this overall amazing person. Yeah.
He also like, helped create Storm.
And Colossus. God, everyone's favorite
like
X-Men.
All of the X-Men.
He also pitched Teen Titans originally.
For Wolfman.
Yeah. And he pitched Watchmen few years later. So like this dude has just the mightiest hand in helping create a lot of modern comics. But I think one of the most heartbreaking things was that Greg Capullo tweeted out is that Len Wein would never see what he's going to do with the Swamp Thing character. Uh-oh. So it's kind of, again, more confirmed that Greg Capullo's working on a Swamp Thing story too. Of course, probably with Snyder. And it's like, oh my gosh. Yeah, it's... And then, like, Bill Willingham passed earlier this year, too. He was the other creator of Swamp Thing. So it's really sad, man. I'm gonna take my Swamp Thing with me home. Or with me to bed tonight.
Just say with you to home?
Not Ben Willingham. Reitstein. Ben Willingham. Willingham was the creator of Fables. Fucking game, my... BW names mixed up. Yeah, dude.
All right, I hear this. So Tom King, he said, after my first Batman, I was struggling, hated my stuff. Len wrote me a note, said he loved the issue, gave me the confidence to keep going.
Oh.
Just like, there was a lot of heartfelt things to say about him, and it's sad to see such a legend go.
Yeah, especially it's like it was quintuple bypass heart surgery.
Yeah, apparently like he got out of surgery 2 days ago, and they said that it went well, and guess sadly it didn't.
Yeah, well, his quintuple bypass heart surgery was in February, and then I guess he just had another surgery pretty recently.
Yeah,
but damn,
that's
also his second wife won $60,000 on Jeopardy. And she used that money to recover or replace a lot of the artwork and books lost in a fire, in his house fire.
Hmm.
Man. Oh.
Man.
It's really sad.
Yeah.
Like, this sucks. Dude did everything. Like, if you think about a character, he, in some way, worked on it.
I can't remember if John got a chance to meet him ever.
I think he did.
I think he was
at a SCCC or one of the
that's what I want to say. I'll ask him about it on Wednesday. I'm sure he's gonna get. There's gonna be tons of people asking him about him. But anyway,
He also came to Denver Comic Con last year.
Okay, so yeah,
probably met him. Then. Yeah,
I can't remember if the DC Swamp Thing was out yet.
I think that he was writing. Was fairly
Who
certain
knows?
It was. Anyway, Steve. You have the last thing on the list.
Yes.
Let's do it.
I wanted to talk about the Netflix Death Note movie.
Oh, boy. I've heard it's a kind of hot shit.
You heard wrong, because it was actually pretty good.
It was all right.
I know you didn't like it because it was edgy.
I think Death Note's is kind of overrated.
It wasn't even...
Thank you. Death Note...
The first arc with Light and L is fucking amazing. That's the best cat and mouse thing I've ever seen.
The show as a whole
is just
overrated.
Okay. Yeah, it's just okay because the second arc is like, okay, this is the same thing,
but
Light's not as conniving.
I feel so weird because my only interactions with Death Note is the Japanese live action movies. I've never actually
watched
those
are actually
really
good.
I know. I've never watched the anime or read the manga.
I like... Netflix Lite so much more than Anime Lite.
Really?
Okay. Anime Lite is a fucking sociopath.
Yeah.
You meet...
It's kind of the point.
You meet a god of death.
And he's just
bored. And your reaction
life.
Is, fall out of a chair, oh, money. And it's like, all right, cool. Let's kill people. Netflix Lite acts like a normal fucking person when a god of death is in front of you.
I have a question.
Yes.
Does he take a chip out of a bag and eat it?
No.
Damn
that's
it.
L.
No, it's L. Light.
No.
L
does sweets.
Okay,
yeah, L does
right.
sweets. No, there's a famous scene from the dub where it's this really dramatic scene. He's like, I'll take a chip out of the bag and eat it. They won't know what I'm doing.
But like, he... I've never been the biggest fan of Death Note. It's always been so overhyped to me, and just looking at some of the characters, I'm like, I don't like Light. He's such, like, I get it. He's supposed to be this guy, holier than thou. Guy, I am a
at
god.
At least he thinks he's holier than thou.
And I hate that. Like, the Kira name that they get, like, in the Netflix, I can't remember how they explained it in the anime.
It sounds like killer.
Well, yeah, but...
Well, no, that's why it translates in Japanese.
But, like, they did a great job of explaining where the Kira name comes from. Of, in German, I think they said, it means light. Mm. But in Japanese, it also sounds like killer. And so it was the perfect... Like, they do a good job of establishing that Light is a genius without shoving it in your face. Like, the movie opens with him selling tests to other kids that he went and filled out. And then he gets busted for it, but it's a very subtle, like, yeah, he's a genius and he uses it for himself. And then it slowly builds, like, wow, he's a lot smarter than you think. And they do such a good job of building that character, as opposed to the anime, where it's like, yeah, he's smart, we're going to shove it in your face. They're also going to shove it in the face. He thinks he's a god.
Well, I mean, how long's the runtime on the movie? Like,
a little under 2 hours.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, you have that versus 26 episodes.
Right, but it's in the first episode that they just shove it in your face of, like, he's a genius, he excels at everything.
He's bored with his life.
Yeah, he's bored, and now he just wants to become a god. Whereas you have Light, he's not happy with his life. His mother was murdered when he was little, and he blames the world for it. And they use that as a good jumping off point for him when he gets the Death Note. It
gives him more motivation.
Yeah, and like the cat and mouse between Light and L, it's not as intense as in...
Oh, that was my favorite part of the whole show.
Like, they don't have a tennis match showdown like in the anime.
God, that was... Man, my favorite part when it was like, all right, this show has just gone off the rails, is when Light makes himself forget about all the things he did, and then he has the notebook replanted at the perfect time for him to regain all of his memories after he learns who the fuck L is. Just like, what in the fuck? Like, how?
Well, and what I like, I give the movie credit, is like kind of the climax of the movie. There is a moment with... Are you going to watch the movie?
Probably not.
Okay.
I don't have enough time.
So at one point, Light's dad, who is the lead on the Kira case, after a lot of shit goes down and 19 detectives kill themselves, because fuck Mia, his dad comes out and says,
I forgot about her.
Like, you're a coward. Go ahead and kill me if you want. And he doesn't kill him. And like, that's the point of like, the humanization of Light, instead of him just being like,
okay,
I am a god, I will do whatever I want, of like, well, I can't kill my dad, Mia wants me to kill my dad, I'm gonna pump the brakes here because things are going off the rails. He actually realizes there is an error to what he's doing. Turns out, it leads to him having this giant master plan anyway, which was such a fantastic ending for the movie. I liked the Light so much better than in the anime. Because, again,
it was a
human version.
That's fair.
Of the Light character.
Yeah, and, like, I think they did Mia, who's supposed to be Misa, right? Yeah. They did her character a little more justice instead of, like, you know, being obsessed with the Kira character.
Fangirl is... They straight go into a relationship.
Yeah, she also adopts the name Kira, and then she kind of, like, just takes on some of the same crazy tendencies that Light does. Like, which... I mean, it's way better than the whole fangirl thing, and it almost humanizes him in a way. But then you realize it's like, oh, Mia's the one who wrote down all those names, and that's why the FBI detectives killed themselves.
The 19 detectives, she ripped a page out of the Death Note and had one detective go through the list of all the names, wrote it down, and planned it to where they all just committed suicide. And that's kind of the tipping off point of where Light realizes what's been going on and how it's affecting Mia. And he creates this master plan of, he makes you think that he cares about Mia, but
I never assumed he.
Well, no, in the movie, like, okay, it was supposed to be like they're in love.
There's like a moment, it's like, oh, he actually is a human.
Yeah, like they have that connection of, we love each other, we're doing this for each other. And then you realize Mia's gone off the rails, so Light has to essentially put her down while saving himself, because she writes his name and there's like, Light's heart will stop beating at midnight. It's like, well, time to devise a super convoluted plan that actually works.
And actually, the Japanese creator liked it enough that, like, even though it's a total diversion from it, it's still a nice homage to it at the same time. Like, kind of like just two lines intercepting in and out.
Was this the one with Willem Dafoe as Ryuk?
And I know you said when we watched the SDC clip that your big thing about Ryuk was that he seems super conniving.
Yeah, it seemed like way more villainous than I ever imagined him.
It's more so that he wants to understand.
Well, he's playing a game. That's all this is to him, is he essentially was bored and he just wants to play a game with
maybe
all these.
I just never picked that up when I watched the original series.
Yeah, it's like, Willem Dafoe's Ryuk is just, he's using them as pieces on a chessboard of like he makes the comment so many times of like, ooh, I like this girl, or, oh, what are you going to do next? Like, dance, puppets, dance.
And the last line of the movie is Ryuk sitting there. It's like, you humans are so interesting. And this is like after all the shit went down.
Like, when they go over Light's plan, it is so fascinating. Like, it all works because of the power of the Death Note. Because, like, this doctor is going to save me from the river that I fall in, put me in a medically induced coma for 2 weeks. Then this other person who I'm controlling for the next 2 days is going to write down all these people's names, and they're going to die, taking the suspicion off of me, then return the Death Note to me. Me is going to die. My name's going to come out of the Death Note. And it's like all of these pieces that he set up perfectly fall into place.
See, that's the Light I always like picture.
That's what won me over, was that whole segment there, on top of the fact that they made Light more of a
human.
Yeah, kind of a relatable human. Of like, yeah, his mom was murdered and the guy got off scot-free because his daddy is the head of a mafia. And that was his real first target.
Yeah, and they reconcile that like in the hospital room.
Yeah, it's like his dad. Yeah, his dad finds the file of the killer because he's had it in his safe, and he's like, "I wondered where this went. Found it in your room. You're Kira, aren't you?" It's like, how did you do it?
Well, you can kill me now too, son. And then Light chooses not to. Like, I don't know. I just because I watched the Japanese live action films, I find L and Light's game just so much more interesting, and like their whole cat and mouse thing kind of made Death Note for me. I could care less about the
Death Note thing. That's the whole reason you really should watch the original.
But like the fact that they like reconciled Mia as a love interest, that one completely psycho bitch crazy, kind of like turned me off. It kind of felt hollow to me, and that's looking at two different live action adaptations.
Yeah, because it's weird. In the original, Mia or Misa actually redeems herself. She becomes her own person. She finally realizes, like, oh no, Light was a piece of shit. Why did I ever follow him?
Well, and I saw a pretty interesting theory on how they can get Mia more back to the Misa character. Is they killed her, quote unquote, at the end of the movie. Like, you see blood coming out of her mouth as she falls on like a flower stand, so you assume she's dead. But at the same time, what's stopping her Shinigami from showing up? Like, she had her Shinigami in the show. Mm-hmm. If Ryuk really liked her and wanted this little game to keep going, he could easily be like, hey, give this girl a Death Note. Like, let's have some fun.
And the creators did say they had at least like two more films planned if it was well received on Netflix. And I mean, there's probably enough people who watched it. It was like, fuck this shit. And it's like, up, view, that's money for us.
Well, and I think a big thing going against it was the hype that the original Death Note had on it, of like people who praise it as a masterpiece of anime.
It's not.
It's nowhere near.
Cowboy Bebop is.
But there are so many people who were just riding that dick of hype that was Death Note, that nothing with a white person in it was going to live up to their expectations.
But the anime is always so much better than the live action movies.
Excuse me, Naruto the musical? Or it happened.
Or Bleach the musical.
Is that one real?
Yeah, that's real.
Oh shit.
There's a reason anime is animated. There's things they can do in it.
And like, again, I saw one that was like they were trying to slam the movie because it didn't represent Asian culture at all.
It's like they're literally westernizing it.
Yeah,
it takes place in Seattle, Washington. Yeah,
that's the point, is it was supposed to be a westernized version of Death Note. Like, what happens
really thinking about like the original, I can't really think of like it being overly Japanese. Well, it's the
same thing
either.
That happened with Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
Like, people were so ripped on, you know, Scarlett Johansson playing this character, and then her character being revealed to be a Japanese lady at some point in the film.
If they didn't do that, and then they claim that it was like, oh no, we didn't do that at all. Or if they westernized it too, like, instead of having the Japanese names.
Right, they made like, it... They put it in Germany or something.
Yeah, it's not Light Yagami. It's Light Turner. It's Mia.
Misa.
And yes, they did have...
And then there's still L who lives in Japan. Well, no, he takes that flight back to Japan at the end of the film. Slash, like, a...
Well, yeah, because he was getting essentially kicked out of Seattle, so he only had to go to Japan. And, like...
Death Note 2, Japan edition.
They did have... an Asian character, Watanabe, portrayed by an Asian person, who Watanabe did a great job.
And this kind of relates to one of my new favorite Twitter trends right now, is hashtag expressive Asians, because Hollywood person came out and said, you know, the reason why it's so hard to cast Asians in roles is that they aren't as expressive as white people, you know, just paraphrasing that a bit. So now it's this whole tirade of people like, oh, Asians aren't expressive, huh? And then, like, Jimmy Wong made like a whole 1 minute reel about his character Ted, who goes through such a huge range of emotions throughout, you know, the entire series of EGHS, or like all these people who are flipping off the camera looking super pissed off and whatnot. And, you know, I was talking about this with Kayla, and we were talking about the Hellboy casting, about how the one guy left the role because of some of that backlash. Like, he took on the role not realizing the character he was cast as was Asian.
Yeah, mad respect for that too.
Yeah, and I'm like, this is awesome.
And like, his reason is like, as someone of mixed race as well.
Yeah, and he's like, mm-hmm. I haven't read the source material. When I did a little research and found out he was Asian, I knew immediately I cannot do this role.
And you can't really blame him on that, because from what I understand, like, sometimes you actors go into auditions and they have no idea what role they're actually going to get it.
Yeah, like Troy Baker voicing the Joker.
Or they can audition to one character and they can get a call and be like, we loved your audition, but we loved it for this character. Do you want this character? Like, yeah, sure. And then they find out, oh, you want a casting for an Asian character. Never mind.
Yep. And like I said, I didn't like the Death Note movie too much, just because it's not my cup of tea.
And that's understandable.
I'm not always going to be the target audience.
And like,
looking at you,
I never had an interest in it.
I'm not going to say it's a perfect movie. It's nowhere near a perfect movie. I wasn't expecting a perfect movie.
Was it entertaining?
It was entertaining. The only real negative I'd give it is the death scenes were a little too over the top. Like, the first one
Did they go a little too anime for them?
Kind of. Like, the first one was someone getting decapitated, and it was a car crashed into another car, a truck hit that, and then a slide ladder on top of that slid out and chopped, like, the top
part. Oh, shit, that's like some Final Destination.
Yeah. It chopped, like, the top part, like, from the bridge of the nose up was just knocked off, and it was just, like, hit, and then it looked like Sloppy Joe mix was flying everywhere.
That Netflix budget.
Or one guy had a knife go into his throat, and he comes up, and just, like, a fountain of blood comes out of his mouth. Like, nice. I get that they're probably going for it hit your jugular, but at the same time you don't need to just be like
that scene. Like, they tried
to do the anime blood spurts.
Yeah, like, he came up and he's like knife and throws like blood everywhere. I'm like, that's a little much.
Now I'm just having flashbacks back to it again when like characters get delimbed.
God, Georgie.
No, please.
Like, that movie was so fucked. Like, the gore was amazing. Like, it was very visceral and it was very real.
As weird as it sounds, it was very tasteful gore. Like, there was blood, there was some gore, but it wasn't just like, arm bit off, fountain of blood that no human body should be able to spray that much at once.
He screamed and he tried to run away and you just see the hand from the sewer.
And like, there was, like, the trail of blood in the water, because, you know, that's what blood would do in the water, is it would spread, but it wasn't just, like, gushing. Or
so fucked.
Like, when someone got an injury, it wasn't like someone broke their arm, and it wasn't like they held up the arm and it just kind of flopped around as they kind of held it up to the side.
Flop.
Yeah,
and here's kind of, squish.
Yeah, you just kind of see it go down. And you're like,
all right,
I get the message there.
Can we be done with it? I'm done with it. I'm done with Stephen King's It.
Chapter one now in theaters.
Chapter one, The Losers Club now in theaters.
Oh, such a good movie. Makes me want to read the book, and just skip over those three pages about the sewer sex.
Train.
Can't even do it. I can't force myself. We're doing STEAM classes, which is like an additional version of STEM. So we're like, full steam ahead, woo, woo.
Oh, I love
chugga,
using
chugga,
steam.
Chugga, chugga.
Please tell me you're going to get a recording of the Coltrane.
Woo!
Coltrane go, woo!
You know, I never realized, like, I was watching my levels when we were doing the intro, and I realized how much they spike
after
I say welcome.
Well,
yeah, it's incredible. I've never actually seen it from
the
single before.
Why do you think
before.
I, like, shudder? Because I'm the only one with headphones on. It, like, pierces my ears.
Well, it's kind of like, just take them off, put them back on.
Just put them around the neck, wait for the intro to be done, then.
You're the one that always goes, man, I'm surprised how consistent you do the intro. And it's like, yeah, I think there was one episode where someone else did the Welcome to the Z2 podcast.
Me, and it was terrible. And I never did it again.
I don't even remember it, to be quite honest.
That's how bad it was. Repressed memories. It was
probably so long ago.
Just like the repressed memories from
this
It.
Happened to me. All right.
Or it's like how Gay Boys comments when you put on your podcaster voice when you do intro.
Yeah. Just kind of like the more excited, just...
Why is he so excited?
And then we actually get into the topics, and you just mellow out.
Yeah, this is the intro. I'm like, my school personality, my teaching persona is always really excited, and I talk really fast
persona
about it, and it's like, oh my gosh, comments are so important. And yeah, for some reason, kids like me. I don't understand why.
Do you just like go into your class and become full drug addict?
Well, it's like, I don't have any caffeine throughout the day, so it's like I really don't mellow as much. I just constantly drink water, and it's like,
water's my shit.
Water's my shit. It was so nice. My principal bought me almonds today because that was on my favorite snack list, and then for my favorite drink, apparently I just put water, and she laughed at me.
You didn't put Red Bull?
Or stock up
I'm done with Red Bull.
Kickstart
after the 4-pack that Jim gave you?
Yeah.
You got your fix?
I got my fix. All right. Maybe once a year.
We're done.
All right, we're done here. So thank you guys for listening to us. It's been a long day and long night.
It's been a while.
Since I could hold my head up high. Anyways.
Monetized.
Yeah. Man, we're getting paid? You're getting paid for this?
Fuck.
Shit.
Distraction.
I'm
going
to have to void that last check.
Damn it.
Kidding.
So thank you guys for listening to us. As always, come check us out. Actually, you're already checking us out. So remember,
thanks
pyramid
for joining
scheme.
Us.
You tell a friend, your friend tells a friend, and then we all get a check for $100 each. Or
we don't know where that money's coming from, but it doesn't matter.
Or you tell a friend and they tell a friend, and you all leave us a review either on iTunes, Google Play, or drop us a comment on SoundCloud or any other website that you use to listen to us. It helps us get into the algorithm more. When
retweet
people hit
us,
Z2,
like
it'd
us.
Be like, whoa, look at this Z2 podcast, people.
We're slowly overtaking when you search Z2 on iTunes. We're slow.
Neat.
Like, it's like there's like four things that come up before. Like,
we're going to overtake them and then decide to rebrand, and then it's all going to be for naught.
No, we're probably going to do it.
Start at the bottom of the list.
If you type in the Z2 at Google. Oh, I'm actually using Google. What the fuck? The Motorola Z Force comes before
like
us.
A normal person.
And normally I use Bing. Anyways, thank you for listening to us as always. If you really like our show, leave us a comment, drop us a hey, and hey, maybe we will even feature your discussion question on next week's episode.
Or your comments.
We did that for a while, and then people stopped sending us stuff to talk about.
Jim, Tim, come on, send us things.
Yeah, send
us. I love the days when I know Tim listens to us, and it's like he sends a picture of Dr. Doom, and it's like, I heard you talking shit. I heard you talking
shit, and then tagged me. Yeah, I said it. I still don't regret it, Tim.
You should definitely read all of Hickman's Fantastic Four run. It makes Doom so much better.
But he's still just such a boring villain. He's so repetitious.
Don't read Secret Wars. Read Time Runs Out.
Man, I'm Dr. Doom. I run a country. Oh, what's that? A cosmic power? I hold the cosmic power now. Ooh, oh, what's that? I got defeated. Rinse and repeat. Dr. Doom.
I can't wait love to you, see Internet. The next
have a good night.
Live fight.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Dr. Doom.